Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Aaron Rupa, who is a journalist at Think Progress, where he just wrote the article, Trump to Track Honor Killings by Muslim Men While Proposing Cuts to Violence Against Women Grants. Welcome to Background Briefing, Aaron Rupa.
Thanks for having me on. My pleasure.
And in this second Muslim ban that was signed on Monday, there's a little part of it that you've picked up on where they basically want to go after honor killings in the United States by foreign nationals. And I take it that this is somewhat along the lines of what Trump mentioned in his recent State of the Union address, where he wanted to set up in the Justice Department to create the Victims of Immigration Crime Engagement Office, or VOICE,
right,
which is, again, supposedly dealing with an almost non-existent, or seems at the very least an incredibly exaggerated problem. In this case, the idea that undocumented immigrants are committing crimes against native-born Americans. In this case, we're talking about something that is clearly has a sort of Islamophobic tinge to it. And so let's begin with some proportionality here. Are there honor killings in the United States?
Well, yes, there are. The research that I saw in looking into this today was that in a typical year, there are less than 30. The numbers that I saw would kind of range between about 23 and 27 for a particular year. So, I mean, you know, it is a problem, and that's not to minimize, obviously, you know, the lives that have been lost. And you never want to kind of dismiss, any loss of life. I feel like I'm sounding like Sean Spicer in saying that, but you're right that there is an issue with proportionality here, that in the grand scheme, you know, compared to other programs that are being cut as part of Trump's budget proposal, which was kind of the hook of the piece that I wrote, this is not a big problem. But you are right. These honor killings do occur in the United States, and based on the numbers I saw, like I said, it appears that it's less than 30 each year.
And what's then in terms of proportionality, are the numbers of crimes of violence against women in this country?
Yeah, you kind of alluded to that. I don't actually have the number right in front of me, but I believe it's over, you know, it's well into the thousands in terms of the, and if you have the story in front of you, you could maybe cite it quicker than I could, but it's well into the thousands annually, just in the United States, in terms of the number of women who are killed as a result of domestic violence. And so, you know, for Trump to kind of frame this issue of honor killings as being, this problem that he wants to direct the executive branch to compile numbers about and sort of propagandize, to have that and then turn around and propose a federal budget that cuts funding for grants that are used to prevent domestic violence, when that is, by an exponential rate, a greater problem in terms of loss of life than these honor killings, really kind of is revealing in terms of the extent to which Trump and his administration are trying to frame up Islam as being a religion of violence, sort of cherry-picking data, cherry-picking intelligence to push this narrative that obviously we've seen, really emerge over the first couple months, 6 weeks or so of Trump's presidency, and of course throughout his campaign as well, of Islam being, a violent ideology, a violent religion. Of course, one of his advisors last week wouldn't even go as far as to characterize Islam as a religion. But, this is something that Trump is very insistent about kind of portraying publicly. And this is one aspect that kind of flew below the radar of this Muslim ban 2.0 that was signed today, that obviously hasn't gotten as much attention as, the countries that are included in the travel ban and things like that, but is significant, mostly in terms of what it reveals about the priorities of the Trump administration.
Now, just specifically here, there are roughly 1,500 women are murdered as a result of domestic violence in any given year, and the Trump's budget proposals will eliminate the Department of Justice's violence against women grants, which amount to $480 million in last year's budget, and they funded 25 grant programs helping domestic violence victims. And it's worth noting that both Donald Trump and his chief strategist, Steve Bannon, have both been accused of domestic assault.
That is correct, yes.
So let's put this then in the context of what happened with the first ban. And I think the one thing that I find pretty extraordinary about this second go-round with the Muslim ban was, first of all, on the first go-round, there was this urgency that we have to push it through. And, of course, that was the excuse for not having interagency vetting of this thing, particularly in terms of its legality, which, of course, was quickly challenged. And we know what happened there with both a federal judge in Washington State and then the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals here in San Francisco striking it down. So this is the second go-around. But the first time around, there was this whole idea, we've got to get this out urgently because of this threat of Muslim terrorists coming into the country. Now, a month or so has gone by, and it doesn't seem to be that urgent. And the one country that was dropped, of course, was Iraq, because I imagine, you know, Mattis and the generals basically told Trump, you know, we can't fight with the Iraqis against the Islamic State if we are stigmatizing them in this way. What do you think happened? Because the one thing that gives it a context here is that the original Muslim ban, the Department of Homeland Security looked at it and said that essentially it's completely off the mark, that citizens from these countries that were on the list are unlikely to be a reliable indicator of potential terrorist activity. And apparently the president asked for this intelligence assessment from Homeland Security. And according to a senior administration official who told the Wall Street Journal that when they got the report, this was not the intelligence assessment the president asked for. So,
yeah. No, and Ian, you're exactly right to point that out, and there's a lot to unpack there, but, you know, that gets back to what I was mentioning at the top in terms of, you know, Trump kind of in his administration trying to frame up Islam as being this violent religion. You know, his administration directed the Department of Homeland Security to put together some research basically looking at the national security implications of the first Muslim ban, and basically asking DHS to take a look at, you know, whether this would actually keep America safe. And, you know, predictably, the conclusion that they reached is that citizenship is not a reliable predictor of extremism. None of the seven countries included in the original ban, not a single resident from any of them in the past 40 years, going back to 1975, has been involved in a fatal attack in the United States. You know, none of the terror incidents that we think of, 9/11, San Bernardino, I mean, none of these, Orlando, none of these were people who would have been affected by the ban. So, you know, of course, DHS, their report ended up basically concluding that this would not keep America safe. And the Trump administration promptly tried to downplay that report. You cited the quote, you know, that a senior official gave the Wall Street Journal, which was basically, we asked for an intelligence report, but not this one. You know, they basically wanted a report that would kind of support their preconceived notions, which is part of the reason why this voice office that you alluded to and, you know, this tracking honor killings, for instance, is very concerning, is because you can see, kind of anticipate how the administration will use these numbers, how they will politicize specific incidents to kind of fit their narrative, you know, rather than let the narrative kind of develop out of the facts of the matter. But in terms of what you asked about the legality, you know, another thing that's really interesting to keep in mind here is that there was a lot of reporting last week that Trump initially planned to sign the Muslim Ban 2.0 last Wednesday. But on Wednesday morning, of course, that was the morning after Trump's address to Congress that generally, for whatever reason, and that's a separate can of worms, but was pretty well received by the pundit class here in D.C. and elsewhere. And so, you know, there were officials who, you know, anonymously, but gave quotes to a variety of media outlets basically saying, yeah, we decided to delay the signing of the executive order because we don't want to kind of water down this positive news cycle that we're experiencing after the speech. But of course, that revealed the hollowness of the original rationale that the travel ban was needed for national security in the first place, because if there really was such an urgent national security impetus for this, it wouldn't make any sense to delay it just because of a positive news cycle. And that's the same glaring inconsistency that we see today, because, of course, this new ban that was signed doesn't go into effect for about 10 days, I believe. So, you know, obviously for the next 10 days, if there are foreign nationals from these six countries who want to come to the United States and have the appropriate documents to do so, they will be able to enter the country until the ban goes into effect. So it sort of undermines the initial narrative, which was that the ban was needed for national security reasons. Of course, Trump administration officials were never able to point to any actual intelligence that they had indicating that an attack was imminent. There is no history of fatal attacks by nationals from the countries included under the ban in the United States. So it was kind of a stretch to begin with. But, you're exactly right that, they are going to have to come up with a more, I guess, proactive rationale for this ban, because they've undermined their own case about the urgent national security necessity of it.
But specifically, the Muslim ban, the second Muslim ban that was signed on Monday, what we're talking about here is the provision directing the Department of Homeland Security to collect and make public information regarding the number and types of gender-based violence against women, including so-called honor killings in the United States by foreign nationals. And of course, that clearly has a whiff of Islamophobia about it, to say the very least.
Okay.
And then it follows the State of the Union, where Donald Trump talked about creating the Victims of Immigration Crime Engagement Office, or VOICE, in the Justice Department, even though immigrants or undocumented immigrants from south of the border are much less likely to commit crimes than native-born Americans. And we've established that at most there are 30 honor killings a year in the United States, as opposed to 1,500 murders of spouses in domestic violence. So there's some proportionality there. But can we put this into a broader perspective? And that is that while Donald Trump is in effect appears to be trying to justify his racism against Mexicans by saying it's a real problem when the evidence indicates that it's not, but nevertheless he's going to set up an office in the DOJ to look into it, acronym VOICE, and now he's going to have Homeland Security look into honor killings in a part of his Muslim ban. How do you contrast that, for example, with Donald Trump's reluctance to repudiate white nationalism, to repudiate all of this white right-wing extremism in this country, because the statistics are very clear that you're much more likely to be killed in this country by a right-wing extremist than by a Muslim terrorist. He was very, very slow in repudiating the KKK guy, David Duke. He did that reluctantly, and he's been incredibly slow in acknowledging all of this desecration of Jewish cemeteries and bomb threats to Jewish centers. He seemed to have had to do that kicking and screaming. So do you detect a double standard here, a willingness to inflate fears of Latino immigrants and Muslims, at the same time not seeming to understand in terms of proportionality that the real threats come from white nationalism, which he's been very slow to address, if at all?
Yeah, so I don't laugh because it's funny. I laugh because, you know, the answer is just, in this case, so obvious. And you look at his campaign going all the way back to, the one that comes to mind for me is December 2015, when he first called for the complete and total shutdown of Muslim immigration into the United States until our representatives can figure out what the hell is going on. A statement that still exists on his website. And, you know, I just don't think Trump is, he's not being honest about, really wanting to do whatever it takes to keep the country safe. I mean, he has this narrative that he has been developing throughout his campaign, and that is only reinforced by the fact that he surrounded himself with people like Steve Bannon and Michael Flynn, where they do kind of, I hate to say it, but it does seem like there is this aspect of kind of war against Islam internationally that they want to pursue in office. And, you mentioned a lot of examples. I mean, you can look at the fact that, a person who purportedly was a fan of his, you know, at least according to his friends, the shooter in Quebec who shot up a mosque in late January and killed six people. Trump didn't have a word to say about that, but right around the same time, maybe a few days later, he was tweeting about a stabbing outside the Louvre in Paris that lightly injured one person. So, you know, there's definitely been a selectiveness on his part and on the part of his administration to politicize Islamophobia and to kind of stoke fears, you know, that we really are, you know, as a society under threat from, as he likes to say, radical Islamic terrorism. But, you know, when you look at the facts of the matter, again, you know, none of the attacks that come to mind when we think of recent terrorist incidents in the United States would have been prevented by the sort of executive order travel ban that was signed today. And, you know, I think when you look at the facts, and you alluded to some of them, New York Times, I guess it was in the middle of 2015, published some research that showed that a person in the United States is seven times more likely to be killed by a right-wing extremist than they are to be killed by an Islamic terrorist. So, you know, there's really, when you look at these things soberly and when you look at the numbers, there is just no rational basis for being fearful of Islam. But that has been Trump's thing throughout his campaign. He surrounded himself with people like Steve Bannon, like Michael Flynn, who of course has now, you know, been jettisoned in the wake of, you know, deception surrounding his communications with Russia, but people like Gorka in his administration who are Islamophobes. And when you look at, you know, the travel ban very broadly, but also specific provisions therein, like the topic of the piece that we've been discussing, that's incredibly obvious when you look at some of the proportionality. And, you know, you look at the fact that Trump is trying to cut funding meant to prevent domestic violence while, you know, politicizing a much smaller problem surrounding honor killings, which is a subset of domestic violence that's often associated with radical Islam. You know, you can just see how disingenuous that is. But when you look at the incidents that Trump has chosen to speak out about, you know, when you look at, you know, just this travel ban in general, it's very obvious that this is something that is a narrative that, you know, he wants the facts to kind of fit his narrative. And he's not very open to, about, you know, the facts leading him elsewhere in terms of his foreign policy and his immigration policy and things of that sort. So, you know, this particular honor killings thing is a very small part of that. You know, unlike the immigration ban, it's not going to directly negatively affect people. You know, it's not going to, you know, cause great headaches for people trying to travel to our country or study here, those sorts of things. But it is revealing about the priorities and the ideology of the Trump administration.
Right. And just in closing, when you referred to the massacre of Muslims at prayer in a mosque in Quebec by a French-Canadian student, that student, by the way, had praised both Marine Le Pen and Donald Trump. And on his Facebook page, he had made it clear that he liked both of them a lot. And, of course, Donald Trump didn't say a word about that massacre in Quebec.
No, he did not.
So I thank you for joining us, Aaron Rupar.
Yeah, my pleasure, Ian.
Thank you.
Anytime.
Again, I've been speaking with Aaron Rupar, who's a journalist at Think Progress, where he just wrote the article, Trump to Track Honor Killings by Muslim Men While Proposing Cuts to Violence Against Women Grants. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back examining the money pouring into school board races in Los Angeles to enable the charter school movement to take over the school board.